all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We also want to thank Eisenhower Center. It's a brain injury recovery center. Learn more about EisenhowerCenter.com. They're located in Michigan and in Florida. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. Contact us if you'd like to be a sponsor on Veterans Radio, and let's move on to our program. We're talking today with Randall Liberty. He's a command sergeant major, retired, about 24 years in the Army. We're going to talk about his career. We're going to talk about his transition into civilian life thereafter and some of the struggles he had and how he had to cope with it. But we really have him on because another guest of ours told us that, hey, you got to talk to this guy. He's got a great story about incarcerated veterans and a great philosophy on how to give those veterans a second chance. And that earlier guest, who's we have an interview on our podcast with, was Craig Grossi, who is the author of Fred and Me, Craig and Fred, and Second Chances. Great books, again, about redemption, second chances. So we called Randall Liberty and recorded this interview, and I think you're going to find it really interesting. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Randall A. Liberty. Randy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, let me set this up for our Veteran Radio listeners. Randy Liberty is a retired command sergeant major. He spent about 24 years in the Army and the Army Reserves from about 1982 to 2006. But he has an interesting professional life as well in terms of law enforcement and corrections. And we're going to get to that because I think he brings some unique things to the table. He is currently the commissioner for the state of Maine Department of Corrections. And he has served as a sheriff and a warden of a prison, so he brings those things from the state of Maine to this national audience. Randy, let's start with this. Let's set up the early life. Tell us about young Randall and why you ended up heading into military service.
Sure. So I was I lived in a here in Clinton, Maine, and it was a challenging sort of financial situation we grew up in. I had three brothers and my mother. My father was, surprisingly, my father was incarcerated often. In fact, the first time that I arrived at the Maine State Prison was 1971 to visit my father. And you know, 35 years later, I was the warden. So pretty interesting journey. And that prison actually is the inspiration for Shawshank, Stephen King here in Maine. And so, you know, difficult times, dad incarcerated, not much money, welfare, free hot lunch, surplus food, all of that. We were raised in a mobile home that after 8 years, we sold it for $1,000. So You can imagine the kind of environment that we lived in. And but we all played sports. We played football, ran track, baseball. And I think that we had whatever success we had was a result of hardworking, mother of integrity, read to us a lot. And then the coaches that played, that coached us, positive male role models. And that's kind of how we navigated. My brother was a year ahead of me, and he graduated in 1981. And his way out was to join the Army and get away and make a better life for himself. And he did. And he was stationed at Fort Devens, Massachusetts, back when that was open, as a military policeman. And I went to visit him, and it seemed like a really good life. I felt it was very similar to football, with a sort of a brotherhood and a sense of belonging. And I saw how he, when he came home in his uniform, how he was proud, and I wanted some of that. And so my senior year, I also enlisted in the delayed entry program and went to the recruiter and asked him to be a military policeman and give him as much college money as he could. And away I went.
But I want to back up to this, because I think it's easy for people to overlook the positive role that they can play. You mentioned the coaches and your mother really is that early influence when, you know, people might otherwise look around and say, man, your life is just, you know, chaos. And maybe elaborate a little bit more on the importance of those early role models and supporters.
Yeah, it's critically important for me to be able to see a male teacher or a male coach. And because my father wasn't around much, and when he was around, he was often drinking, or there was often domestic violence in the home. And so when I saw those positive male role models, and they taught me how to speak to a woman, taught me how to speak to young people, how to lead, you know, and that's where I think some of my core leadership attributes come from, is those coaches. And they're someone to look up to. And they had goals, and they had short and long-term goals, and they had success. And that's the example that I took as I grew up. You know, I think I had a decision to make. And often, as we know, we can learn as much from people that are poor leaders and make the wrong decisions by indicating that I don't want to travel that path. And so I learned that from my father and from the world positive role models, the direction to travel. I saw they had nice homes. I saw they had nice jobs. I saw they had good relationships. And that I wanted some of that.
And this wasn't a decision that you were going to be career military, I don't believe, when you went in. And I don't think I don't know if your brother ended up being career military, but you know, most of us start out with, you know, we'll do our tour and then we're going to get out. But something resonated with you along the way, didn't it?
Yeah, sure it did. I found something special in the Army. I fellowship, that brotherhood, that pride of putting the uniform on, you know, the richness of traveling to foreign countries. I mean, when I graduated from AIT, military police school, I got orders to go to Korea. So I had an opportunity to serve in Yongsan for 14 months, and I found that to be rich culturally. You know, it was important for me, knowing that my mother dropped out in eighth grade. My father got his GED at Thomaston State Prison. And I saw the struggles that lack of education brought. And so it was important for me to secure as much college money as I could through the GI Bill, and I did. After I did my first three-year enlistment, I had a decision to make. My brother was in Germany, and he decided to stay in, and he went from military police to 11 Mike, a Bradley fighting vehicle crewman, and I decided that I wanted to get out and pursue a full-time law enforcement career, but still be able to enjoy the fellowship that the military brings. And I joined a National Guard unit. As a military policeman, I always felt as though I wanted to be more of an infantryman. And fortunately, here in Maine, there's a mountain infantry company. And I served there while I was going to college and when I started my law enforcement career.
I gave short shrift to the Army National Guard. I skipped right over that and went to the Army Reserves, so I apologize for that.
No, no trouble.
And I, you know, again, it's one of those things where you just sort of make that decision. If you like what you're doing, you stay at it. You're getting something all along the way. And one of the things you went in knowing you wanted to come out with is more education, and you were able to do that. And climb, if you will, from an associate degree to a bachelor's degree to a master's degree, That was obviously very important to you, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I learned very early on that education is critical to any success. And when the window of opportunity opens, you need to be ready. And so I did my first 3.5 years at University of Maine at Augusta. And then I had an opportunity to get hired by the Kennebec County Sheriff's Office, where I remained for 24 years. And while I was at the sheriff's office, I was a canine handler. I was a drug investigator. I was a rescue diver, pulled a bunch of victims from lakes, rivers, and streams. I did that work, and I was going to college simultaneously and raising a family. And so, as you mentioned, I was able to pick up an associate degree in criminal justice, a bachelor's degree in public administration. And then as sheriff, I went back to school, and I picked up a graduate degree in leadership from Liberty University. And that served me well along the way. So simultaneous to that career in law enforcement, I did 7 years in a mountain infantry unit, went to Italy with them and trained with the Alpini mountain soldiers. I then joined the reserves and became a drill sergeant with the 98th Division and went to drill sergeant school at Fort Devens, and then pushed troops at Fort Benning and Fort Leonardwood. And then I picked up a master sergeant chief instructor at West Point, and I taught there for 3 years. And that was an honor to work with those young soldiers. And then in 2004, I volunteered to be on a MIT team, 10 of us embedded with an Iraqi infantry battalion. We recruited them on the Iranian border, and then Fallujah kicked off in the fall of 2004. And we went down and fought with the RCT-1 and RTC-7, the Marine Corps, 1st and 2nd Marine Divisions. And we fought our way into the city, and we occupied for about 10 months.
And I told Randall at the outset I wanted to talk about that, but I'm going to push some of that to the end because I want to talk about what I think is kind of unique here, and that is, you had this opportunity. You were in the sheriff's department. You got elected sheriff, and then you were moved on to corrections as the warden of the state prison. Talk to us why that change in direction, maybe a little bit, and how the things you'd learned in service kind of came to bear as well.
Yeah, so for me, I had done 26 years at the Kennebec County Sheriff's Office. I was the chief for 5, and I was the elected sheriff for 9. When I left for Iraq in 2004, I truly didn't understand the impact of war. I'd been in the Army system for 23 years, but you don't know until you know. And the fighting in Fallujah, a lot of casualties, and I saw a lot of sacrifice in the city. And so when I came back, I was a bit changed. And so I had post-traumatic stress as a result of not only the time that I served in Fallujah, but also the 20 plus years that I had served in law enforcement, with the unattended deaths, the suicides, the self-inflicted gunshot wounds, the fatal accidents, the rescue diving, all of that was kind of, combined to kind of place me where I was. And it was there that I recognized that there was a lot of work that could be done with veterans returning and those that struggled with the criminal justice system. And, how could I help? And so that's when I began the journey of creating a veterans pod at the Kennebec County Jail. I served on the Maine Military Community Network as the chair. I did an awful lot of work with veterans, both law enforcement veterans and then those that had been arrested and placed in jail. And so I found that work to be very meaningful. And the moving on and retiring from the sheriff's office, moving on to the Maine State Prison as the warden, gave me a larger platform, larger budget. I could get more done, I felt, and make a difference in people's lives. And that's when I created the veterans pod there. And there we have 64 veterans that are co-located in that pod. And they have the shared experiences of being veterans. And we have Vietnam vets, Iraq, Afghanistan, Panama. We have every flavor you can imagine, every branch. And that shared experience of being in the military really gives that unit a special feel. And a lot of good things happening in that unit.
Well, and it's, there's this interesting line, you sort of mentioned it, which is there's a lot of veterans who are in law enforcement, and I certainly have those in my family, and you have far too many veterans who are on the wrong side of the law And I think the FBI statistics are something like 8% of all, everybody incarcerated is a veteran, which is way above the national numbers. And the sacrifice of war and service and what you see sort of adds up over time. You noticed it from your law enforcement career and your military career. You said after a while it just became a lot to carry, and you had to begin addressing some of the PTSD and other issues just to make sure you stayed on the right side of the line, didn't you?
Yeah, for sure. So when I came back, my symptoms of post-traumatic stress were quick to anger and quick to emotion. And so when I went to Iraq, I thought it was important for me to come back and tell the story. I was a 40-year-old, and I did a lot of public speaking, and I'd speak to groups. I brought a lot of my sort of war artifacts with me, and I'd tell them when I began to speak, I said, there may be a time when I'm speaking to you that I have to pause and I'll get emotional, but it's just a natural response to the trauma that I've faced, both in law enforcement and in Iraq. And I did need to get help. I went to Tugas VA, and I received some help outpatient. I would go every Tuesday at 1 o'clock, and I would dread it because it would be like ripping off a scab. And I'd find any excuse not to go. And my brother, who was retired Army, he's an infantryman, and my wife sort of teamed up on me and ensured that I went, and they followed up on it. And so did the VA. They'd call me and they're, where are you? Why aren't you here? And then over time, through therapy, my symptoms were diminished, and my triggers didn't happen as often. But I still, you know, I was in law enforcement, so I still carried a gun. I still smelled the brake free, the oil, that same lubricant we'd use when I pulled my M4 up to my nose. I'd still go to gun calls. I'd still see, you know, death and dying. And so there are still triggers, but you just have to find a way to navigate through that. And there are a lot of paramedics, EMTs, law enforcement officers that have served and are military veterans, and there is impact. But I would say this, there's no dishonor in getting help, and you and your family deserve it. You've earned the help, the assistance, and your life will be better for it.
And I think too many guys get worried about how's this going to impact my job, and I don't want it on my record, and I don't want people to think I'm weak. Those of you who don't know Randall A. Liberty here, the commissioner of the state of Maine Department of Corrections, he's a badass. And he was willing to take, whatever risk associated with, hey, I need some help to have a better quality of life. And that's really what we kind of got to get the message out to more guys on, is the VA is there to help you. Your family's out there to help you. You should let them help you, shouldn't you?
Yeah, I agree. One of the things that was important for me is, as the sheriff at the time and as the warden, is to be out up front and say that this is a natural response. It's, I talk to my guys and say, I was a drill sergeant, and I would say things to the privates like, don't contaminate my Army with your weakness and suck it up. I don't want to hear you complaining. And we promote that sort of outer shell and toughness, you know, and it serves us well in combat. But when you come back, you have to let those emotions out. You have to be honest and frank about it. And me working with other veterans and assisting them in their journey and them helping me in my journey, I made all the difference. And I was fortunate enough to be approached by Jennifer Rooks of the Maine Public Broadcasting, and she wanted to do a project related to veterans and post-traumatic stress. And so we worked on it. And the documentary is called A Matter of Duty. And you can Google it, A Matter of Duty, Maine Public Broadcasting. And it shows an hour long, sort of some of my struggles and how I resolved them. And then it follows five fellow veterans that struggled. And some were successful and some were not. But it just tells a journey, and it tells the cost of war. And, the cost is really a family affair. The families along with us for that trauma and that recovery. And so, if the listeners have an opportunity, A Matter of Duty, Maine Public Broadcasting, it's worth a listen. It allows you to know that you're not alone, and the struggles are real, and you and your family deserve to get help.
Well, and it does, you want to break that generational cycle of trauma that all too often can go from one generation to another. And fortunately for veterans, you have available services through the VA, and we'd certainly encourage folks to utilize those things. Let me come back to sort of maybe some of your philosophy on the men who are incarcerated, and in particular the veterans that you've had under your custody and control, whether it was in the sheriff's department, in the jails, or in the, as a warden in the prison, and now as commissioner of the Maine Department of Corrections. As you look at these men, talk to us a little bit about your philosophy on how to deal with them during the time that, again, they're sort of under your custody and control, because you've done some unique things.
Yes, you know, my primary philosophy with anyone in corrections is about redemption. I believe in redemption. I believe that all of us at one time or another ask for forgiveness, and I believe we can all be born again, and we can move on to another chapter. And with the veterans that have been in my care, when I speak to them, it's important for me to talk to them and say, I understand, because I've been there too. And I very easily could have been arrested or caught or made a judgment call with anger management issues, domestic violence issues, self-medicating. We're all very close to that and how we deal with post-traumatic stress and the trauma of service sometimes. So my philosophy is, you laid it out there for us. You dedicated X amount of time and years and efforts and sacrifice. It's my duty upon return to assist you in your transition back. And so that's what I don't judge. I assist them where I can assist them. I tell them that I too had struggles, but I worked my way out of it, and I'm here to help you. And so we don't leave anyone behind, no man left behind, regardless. And so that's the philosophy I've taken with the Veterans Pod, with the veterans transitioning back, with veterans that don't have law enforcement issues and are coming off active duty. I spend a considerable amount of effort working with the Department of Labor to recruit them and welcome them to the sheriff's office and welcome to the Maine State Prison and the Maine Department of Corrections, letting them know that they have a home and they have a job, period. And we're an environment where we're veteran-friendly, and you'll see rank structure and chain of command and all those things that you're accustomed to. The Maine Department of Corrections is hiring veterans, and we do all the time.
And you really also have a sort of adapted programming that is impactful for these guys. And there's three or four different types of programs. Why don't you start with the gardens that you've adapted as a program?
Yeah, so one of the things that I enjoy doing is gardening. And I'm a master gardener. And one of my philosophies in corrections is try to do things low cost, no cost. Tax dollars should be held sacred. And when I take that dollar from that 80-year-old widow, I want to make sure that I use that dollar very efficiently and I use it well. So what I've done is we collaborated with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, and we've now certified 60 of our residents, 60 of our inmates, to become master gardeners. All of the area at Maine State Prison and other of my facilities, we've tilled up all the land. We've composted all the organics coming out of the kitchen. And at the Maine State Prison, we feed 3,000 meals a day. And prior to my arrival, all of the leftover organics were being thrown out the back and brought to a landfill. We started the organic composting process. Now all of that is rotated back in the soil. And last year, I think we did 30,000 pounds of food inside the prison walls with those master gardeners, collaborating with greenhouses on the outside and doing low-cost, no-cost efforts. They provide a limitless salad bar to their fellow residents and to the staff that are working there. Fresh vegetables that are grown and picked this morning, and they're on the salad bar tonight. So those kinds of things have been therapeutic for individuals to nurture a seed to a transplant, transplant that into the ground, and then grow tomatoes, cucumbers, radishes, beans. All of that has really worked well.
One of the things we've certainly talked about on Veterans Radio before, and we're talking to Randy Liberty now, a command sergeant major retired, has been in law enforcement for his professional career. But one of the things we've talked about, Randy, over the years is the importance of having a purpose. and feeling good about what you're doing. And I think a lot of guys transition, they sort of feel they lost the purpose when they get out of service. Maybe they head in a direction that they're not very proud of. And a program like this really gives them purpose and something to be proud about, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up purpose, because we all need a reason to get out of bed and feel good about ourselves. And so one of my core philosophies is purpose-driven incarceration. When you arrive, we need to identify what exactly brought you there, and we need to get busy on fixing that. If it's post-traumatic stress, we need to get you treatment. If it's substance use disorder, we need to get you help and programming that way. And so one of the things I do in the Veterans Pod is we partner with the America Vet Dogs. The America Vet Dog Organization produces service dogs for disabled veterans. What we've done is we have eight labs that are in our facility in the Veterans Pod, and they're trained for about 14 months. We certify veterans to become canine trainers, and they train those dogs to be released into the community with veterans. And so they have a real purpose, sense of purpose, still giving back to fellow veterans. And that's worked very, very well. We've done three cycles of those. The guys are very proud of the work that they've done for fellow vets.
Well, and it really gives you, that purpose, and certainly in dealing with training dogs, anybody who's a dog lover knows you get this unconditional bond and love from the animal. So it's good all the way around. And I'll do a little promo for friend of Randy's here and mine, which is Craig Grossi. Craig is the author of, you may know him from the book Craig and Fred, about Fred, the dog he snuck out of Afghanistan during his tour. He has a new book out called Second Chances, which talks about his involvement at the Maine State Prison and getting to know Randy Liberty and what's being done to assist veterans and others through some of these programs, the gardening program we just talked about, the American Vets Service Dog Program. But you've also adopted sort of volunteers who have their own skills. Craig Grossi, as an author, established a writing program. There are music programs. Talk to us again about the importance of these kinds of volunteers and their programs.
Craig was a real gift to me and to the fellow veterans, both incarcerated and free. And the work that he did in the Veterans Pod was critical. It's one thing for a paid employee to go into a pod and spend time with the residents, but something other to have an individual that doesn't have to be there, that's a civilian, that doesn't have to go into the prison, and they give up their own time to volunteer and help these individuals transition. And like with anyone else, we want to feel as though people care about us and they're not forgotten. Just like when we're deployed, it doesn't matter what you receive for a care package or a letter. It's just that people have remembered you and care enough to think of you. And so Craig was a gift. Another set of volunteers are individuals called the Liberation Institute. They came in and they volunteered to teach yoga and mindful meditation. And not only did they teach that, but they also certified 18 of my residents to be nationally certified yoga instructors. So those yoga instructors now go into the units with their fellow inmates, and they teach yoga, and it really quiets the pod. It gives mindful reflection, and it gives people purpose. And those volunteers that come in for yoga, for the canine programs, for the writing programs, for fly tying, for any of that sort of work that they're doing is really profound and makes a difference in these men's lives.
I think it's easy for most of us just not to even think about the guys who are incarcerated. And maybe we'll think a little bit about them if they're veterans and go, oh, geez, that's just too bad that, you know, they have a mental health issue or a substance abuse issue. But we just don't spend much time thinking about it, which is why I'm so happy to have you talking about it today, Randy. How do people get themselves enough courage or enough interest to say, maybe there's somewhere local I could reach out and help?
No, there absolutely is. We know that the people that arrive in my facilities have mental health issues, substance use disorder, trauma in their background, learning disabilities, a combination of all of that, neglect, poverty. That's 99% of the people that I have incarcerated. And they're people just like you and I. And if you think about this, if you impact that young woman or the young male that's incarcerated, and you can help them pivot to be a successful citizen, you make a difference not only in their lives, but in their parents' lives and in their children's lives. So if I'm working with a young lady and she has three children and the grandmother who's 70 is watching the children, I make a big difference if we can get her on the right path, getting her the right treatment, getting a good vocation, and helping them. You help a lot of folks, and it makes a big difference.
Well, and I do think there are folks out there who are able, ready, willing to help, and they just kind of need that nudge. And hopefully this discussion will nudge them in that direction. Certainly if you read Second Chances by Craig Grossi, it'll really nudge you in the direction of the value of the time that you devote. But I want to talk about the mental health problem for a minute, if we could, Randy. It's a challenge, I suspect, for any state organization, certainly Department of Corrections, to have sufficient resources to deal with those kinds of problems. Is there a relationship between what you're doing in a Department of Corrections and what the VA can offer to veterans who are incarcerated?
Yes, they do. They're challenged a bit because they can't provide services that we're obligated to provide. But what they do provide at the VA is they bring a liaison in and let everyone know, all the veterans know what exactly their rights are and what they have for benefits. Others like Easter Seals, the vet centers, the Bureau of Veterans Affairs, those organizations come in and they do a lot more work internal to the facilities, and they do a great job. And that, there are quite a few assets and there are quite a few individuals that want to come in and want to assist if you ask. And you provide an environment where they feel welcomed and they don't have to be, apprehensive about, can I get in? How difficult is it to get in the facilities? Will I be turned away? If you knock down those barriers, you'll find that there are a lot of people in the community that care about veterans and they want to do good. In fact, I've been able to, we have an American Legion post on the Midcoast, and we created an American Legion post inside the prison in the veterans pod. It's the Brian Bucher Memorial American Legion post. And that gave the men a sense of belonging. We have American Legion leadership that comes in, helps them with the meetings, gives them focus, and that's really worked well also. So the service groups, the VFW, the American Legion, the DAV, those have all been very helpful assisting the veterans on the inside.
And it creates a bridge when they get out of a group that they might have an affinity to and a relationship with, and that's got to be helpful.
Oh, very much so. One of the biggest challenges with incarceration is transition. And if individuals have a home church or a home Legion post and any of those resources that may be helpful to them in transition, they'll be apt to be much more successful.
One of the other things that I think is worth talking about to somebody who's an expert in law enforcement and corrections is there's sort of a national trend now to recognize the need for some state court diversion programs, whether they be mental health, but a lot of places are adapting veterans courts as well. Have you seen that in Maine, and have you an opportunity to see the value of it?
Yes, we established a veterans court in 2006 in the state of Maine, and it was very, very successful. Janet Mills, the governor, her sister-in-law, Nancy Mills, was the justice, and it worked extremely well. If you watch A Matter of Duty, you'll see actually the veterans court and how that's working. We've had some really good success. We've been able to give worst case scenarios and give the veterans an option, good wraparound services for the veterans. The district attorney is a specialist in veterans affairs. We have Maine pretrial, which does the management of those individuals. It's gone very, very well. Some really nice partnerships. We currently now have two veterans courts in the state of Maine, one in Augusta and one in Portland, and it's going very, very well.
A good example of where people could help locally as well to keep veterans out of being incarcerated by working with veteran courts and diversion programs. And I know we've pushed the Command Sergeant Major up to his time limit. I appreciate the extra time that you gave us today, Randy, and all of the work that you're doing in the Department of Corrections for the state of Maine. I'm glad that Craig put us together and created an opportunity to talk to an expert with your experience, not only in the military, but law enforcement and corrections.
Well, it's an honor to be with you. And anyone listening, if you'd like any assistance or anything I can do for you, please don't hesitate to reach out to me, Randy Liberty, the commissioner of the Maine Department of Corrections.
And thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Nice chatting with you.
Well, that's the kind of story you're not going to get anywhere else on commercial radio. That's for darn sure. Very interesting. We couldn't do this without the help of our sponsors, and we've mentioned NVBDC.org earlier. But I should also mention U.S. Wings, which is helping us with those promotional giveaway jackets, which we do each month. So hit our website at veteransradio.net to check that out. And we also are pleased to have support of local VSOs, the Vietnam Veterans of America chapter, the Charles S. Kettles chapter, 310 in Ann Arbor, the VFW Post 423, and the American Legion Post 46, both in Ann Arbor. And after this short message, we'll be right back to hear a little bit from Craig Rossi on our interview with him.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. Even small actions can make a world of difference. If you know a veteran in crisis, please call the Veterans Crisis Line, 800-273-8255. 800-273-8255. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
We want to welcome back to Veterans Radio Craig Grossi. Craig is a Marine. He's written a couple of books, and we're glad to have him back in Veterans Radio. Craig, welcome back.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me back, Jim. It's great to be back.
Well, let me remind folks that it was back in the fall of 2017, which in this pandemic environment seems like a lifetime ago. We had a chance to talk about a book that you recently wrote called Craig and Fred. And give us a thumbnail of what Craig and Fred was about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it, I guess it's kind of the story of, to boil it down into super simplistic terms, it's the story of how and where I got my first dog. You know, it's a really unlikely kind of circumstances that led me to connecting with a stray dog in Afghanistan, and not just in Afghanistan, but in one of the most contested and violent areas of the country. Back in 2010, it was an area called Sangin in Helmand Province, and I was an intelligence collector assigned to support reconnaissance Marines on the front line of a really volatile fight in Sangin. And, you know, I was expecting a lot of things during that mission. One of them was not to encounter a really just overwhelmingly funny and compassionate and stubbornly positive dog, that seemingly was just kind of waiting for us. And so it's this kind of the story about how we all, myself and my fellow Marines, all fell in love with him, and how he fought and patrolled kind of alongside of us for over 30 days. And then how I snuck him out of the battlefield and then eventually out of the country to my family back home in the Washington DC area. And then it's really just also the story of after Afghanistan and how Fred and how so many dogs often do, you know, rescued me right back.
And that's really part of the story, and that's why in 2018 I told our veteran radio listeners that Craig and Fred was, quote, one of the best reads of the year, close quote.
Oh, thank you.
Well, you know, it captured so much. It captured this, you know, sort of funny story about, as you say, a stubborn dog in Afghanistan who wouldn't go away, and but was smart enough to be with the Marines and not, you know, not draw any attention to them when they were out on patrol. The story of you smuggling it out of Afghanistan against all the, you know, orders and general requirements is pretty funny how that all happens, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a great read, but it also, more importantly, talked about your road trip and the value of a dog and sort of the road trip across the country to deal with the issues of TBI and PTSD and just readjusting to civilian life. And I found that part of the book really insightful, and I actually gave the book to a lot of moms whose sons were coming back, and they were having a tough time relating to him because they couldn't relate to where he was or what he was doing, and why'd he get a German Shepherd, and why'd he buy a motorcycle, and what the hell is he doing? And I think your book really helped people understand sort of that coming home aspect of it. I don't know if you wrote it for that purpose, but it had that purpose.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I'm so glad that you shared that with families and thank you for that. And, what you just described is something that I saw, since the publication of Craig and Fred again and again is people taking lessons and taking things from that story and from that book that they needed. And it's certainly not something that I had any intention of putting in there was any kind of guide for a family member or a mother or a veteran or somebody, you know, to use as an example or as a way to relate to somebody's, transition or somebody's struggles. It's just what happens when we share our stories. We see each other in, you know, we relate to each other through our stories. And that was my only goal with Craig and Fred was to get that story out there because it was burning inside me and I wanted to share it as authentically and as often as possible. And what's happened since has been incredible because for some it is about, you know, the transition process and about coming home and all of that. But to others, it's about trust or love or both, you know, or, you know, sticking to your guts, you know, and pursuing something, you know, and it's about so many different things. And I've heard it all, you know, in our travels and in our speaking engagements all over the country since. And it's just motivated me to really continue to write and to share.
Well, you know, that's a good transition because I was going to ask you, like, how does a jarhead think he's got a second book in him?
Hey, he's got to sharpen the crayons, man.
Exactly. Don't eat them.
And
we're gonna get to Second Chances, which talks about your work and Fred's work, if you will, at a prison in Maine. But I wanted to set this up for folks who, you know, maybe haven't thought about it. The U.S. Department of Justice has a report out that indicates about 8% of all inmates in state and federal prison and local jails are veterans. Now, that's far in excess of how many, you know, the percentage of people who serve in the military. So you have to kind of ask yourself a little bit about why we have so many veterans in prisons and jails. And we'll come back to that at the end, maybe a little bit to talk philosophy if we have a chance. But that's kind of the setup, if you will, because you got asked, you live in Maine and you got asked to come to the Maine State Prison to talk. Tell us a little bit about how that happened.
Yeah. So it was, again, it was, just kind of a natural opportunity that came through the promotion of Craig and Fred and of just, you know, doing what I love to do, which is telling the story of Fred. And I did a radio show here in Maine and the host said, hey, you know, you should really think about going up and seeing some of the things that are going on up at Maine State Prison. The warden is an Iraq war veteran. He's this incredible guy, you know, and I'll connect you with him. And so she connected me with his name is Randy Liberty, and he was the warden at the time. And one of the greatest names I've ever heard in my life, Randy Liberty. And I think within a week or two, I found myself driving up with Fred through the prison to talk to the staff a little bit. And then to go into an area that he had designated a whole cell block. They call them pods, but he had designated a whole pod just for veterans, just for inmates who had served in the military. And he specifically wanted me to go and speak to the men of the veterans pod. I went up with Fred and something, even before I went behind the wall and behind the wire, to meet the men, something really about the culture at Maine State Prison really struck me. And I realized very quickly that it was no accident that Fred and I were there, and that there was something there for me to really explore. I didn't know what it was at the time, but after that first visit, I just continuously just tried to find reasons and just to spend time up there. And so I ended up creating a writing program, a weekly writing program to kind of get myself up there and get in the door and spend more time with the men of Maine State Prison.
What did you find, Craig, about it that kept pulling you back into that environment to meet with these guys?
Yeah, I think it was a lot of things. I think mostly it really says a lot about the culture that a good leadership can create. And Randy is a really great example of that, of having the right attitude and having the right people around him. It can be a real kind of trickle down effect when you have somebody that in charge that, really cares and really engages and really takes the time, with his staff and with the men, the inmates. I think just seeing that he loved what he did and does was a beautiful thing to see. And I think I'm always drawn to people and that are really doing something that they love or that they really feel a calling for. And Randy, and the rest of his staff, are really an example of that. And so I think that initially, it was what kind of drew me in, because it felt similar to being in a unit in the military, to thinking back to my deployment to Afghanistan. Like, I'm still so connected to the men that I served with over there, because we all shared this mission and this place, and it felt kind of that similar kind of feeling, that I just wanted to be near. So that was part of it for sure.
And it sounds like you quickly realized that there was an opportunity to have an impact on people's lives.
Yeah, I wanted that. That's something I think I've been looking for ever since leaving the military, is just being able to make an impact. And I think that's something that a lot of veterans try to find upon leaving as well. It's just an opportunity and a way to make an impact, either on other people's lives or upon an industry or something to that regard, something that really has a legacy to it. And yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. And I felt a connection to the men. I felt a connection to the inmates, you know, and just through how honest they were with me and how connected, you know, I felt I was to them just through that honesty.
Well, let me ask you, you've set up a writing program and we've certainly in the past talked to folks who have found that writing programs are very beneficial for veterans, folks who may have mental health issues, who need to get things off their chest, just sort of a way to express themselves safely. What were you trying to accomplish in the writing program?
Yeah, that's a great question. For me, it was, I had seen what writing had and has done for me through the writing process of my first book of Craig and Fred. I was able to really see the trajectory of my life and the things that, and be essentially be grateful for the good and the bad, almost equally, you know, and just little things and big things like that didn't go right. The jobs I didn't get, the deployments I didn't get, you know, all kind of led me to, that specific time and place in Afghanistan with the recon Marines and then eventually to Fred, you know, and so I was really able to kind of appreciate everything about my life that had led me to that point to meeting this dog. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if it hadn't been for the writing process. And so I hope that I could kind of give the men of Maine State Prison something similar through writing. And you know, just an opportunity to kind of review and reflect on the trajectory that their lives had taken and hopefully, you know, come away with some gratitude and with some understanding.
And as that process evolved and the writing workshop continued for some time, did you see that kind of impact or that impact on some of the guys?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think almost instantly. Some of them, you know, took a little more time than others to kind of warm up, but most of them jumped right in and were not shied away from, you know, really exploring themselves and their experiences through writing. And it really inspired the ones that maybe were a little bit hesitant, you know, to kind of jump in a little bit more and really dig deep. And it was really informal. I didn't want it for a second to feel like I was worried about punctuation or grammar or anything like that. It was really, you know, some of the guys wrote songs, some of them wrote poems, some of them, you know, wrote, you know, more traditionally just kind of a story with a beginning, middle, and end. And then some of them would share orally, you know, just a story about, you know, that they had like thought about for the week leading up to it. So it was really beautiful to see. And that's one of the things I'm most excited about with Second Chances is I share a lot of their writing in the book. So it gets to get out there and people can read it for themselves and almost feel like they're in that room with me and Fred with these men.
Well, in the book is Second Chances, A Marine, His Dog, and Finding Redemption. And I want to bring in another program that Maine State Prison stood up, and that's the Service Dog Program. Can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, of course. That was another thing that really kind of drew me in was the fact that they had these dogs up there that from American Vet Dogs, which is an incredible nonprofit, and they train some of the best service dogs that you can ask for, just very, very professionally run. And the dogs come out, you know, capable of absolutely incredible things, you know, for everything from, you know, waking up from a nightmare to, you know, bringing someone a pill bottle, you know, gently and placing it in a specific place, you know, based on the needs of that person. I mean, it's an incredible thing to see. And I didn't really appreciate the amount of patience, compassion, dedication, and just drive that it takes to train a dog like that to do those things, and then to see firsthand men convicted of, you know, in some cases pretty horrible crimes, demonstrating all of those things for the benefit of someone that they will probably never meet. Was an amazing thing, and American Vet Dogs was really, really great to allow me to kind of be a fly on the wall throughout the training process of a couple of dogs that I follow throughout the book. And so, yeah, that's another thing that the reader gets to kind of see is that process just in general, and that the men of Maine State Prison are capable of being a huge part of that process.
That's a portion of our interview with Craig Grossi, who wrote Craig and Fred. I always do it wrong. I always give the dog more credit than the human being, and he may too. So Craig and Fred, and now Second Chances. You can hear the full podcast by going to veteransradio.net and capturing the whole interview. But I wanted folks to think about that a little bit. Again, it's easy to ignore those 200,000 veterans who are incarcerated around the country and kind of write them off. But I think there is the opportunity for redemption. Let's all hope so. And this is certainly a story of that redemption. And you've now heard from two men intimately involved, giving you an inside look. So we really appreciated the time that Randall Liberty and Craig Grossi gave us to maybe explore an area where veterans are that hopefully very few of us will end up. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't think about our brothers and sisters who find themselves on the wrong side of the law, often because of the service that they perform for the country and the resulting maybe self-medication that they got themselves involved in, rather than seeking appropriate treatments from VA or other providers who are out there who desperately want to help. So I think it's easy to ignore those problems, but let's not do that. Having listened to these men and hearing these stories, I think there's more that all of us can be doing, whether we're veteran service organizations or just veterans in general. So we appreciate you listening in on Veterans Radio as we talk to the nation about our veteran issues. As always, check us out on Facebook at Veterans Radio, or check us out at veteransradio.net, where you can keep track of what's going on, see daily, almost daily postings, certainly see weekly website updates. That's where you can register for that U.S. Wings jacket. And thank you again to our sponsors. Until next time on Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.